Welcome, everybody. It's nice to see your faces. I want to share. I didn't go over my notes this morning before I pray. I felt like I wanted to share this story. I've got a friend. Let's call him Pico. The names will be changed to protect the innocent, all right? It's a real friend, Pico. It's not his real name. And we were talking at the doorway about just wanting to hear what Jesus says to us, you know. And he said, Pastor, you ever get like a vision from God? And I could tell by his face, like, this is a question I need to talk about. I pulled aside. I said, yeah, I have at times in my life. God's caught me and got a hold of me in crazy ways. He goes, well, I was daydreaming one day, and all of a sudden, zoom, I was like in a 3D movie with Jesus. And he was walking with me. And I said, awesome. What'd he say? Because I'm like, in, you know, Pico, tell me what God is saying to you, you know. And he said, he told me I was stubborn. I had that conversation with him before too. You know, he said, he's stubborn. And then he goes, and I saw it like this. This just wasn't exact, maybe his vision, but as he's telling me, I saw it. And it was like a game, Candyland, you know. And he said, God kept pulling me over. Jesus kept pulling me over and go, you know, I was fighting in my heart like, I'm not really that stubborn. Pico was like, I'm not that stubborn, you know, God. And said, Jesus said, let me show you. He took him to a moment in his life and he said, I tried to get your attention here and said, no, don't go after that. And you did what you wanted to do. And I told you no to that relationship and you just didn't listen. And I told you no to that. And every time I've spoke to you over the course of time, I see all these stubborn moments. You need to do what you wanted to do. And then you were fussing because you ended up in a place you didn't want to be. You're in the swampy pit and you could have been in Candyland Palace. Ever been that stubborn? Yeah, this is the season you got to let God break our stubborn. This is like, you're not guaranteed another season. We put more people in the ground this year than I can count. They're under 60. You don't know when your season's up. So take advantage of the season you're in, right? It's a good time to pray. Father, I pray that I would be the passionate person you call me to be, but I won't be overboard. I won't blow them out of the water this morning. But Lord, I thank you that you're passionate. You're passionate about us. We call it the passion of the Christ. You don't do that without love. So, Father, I pray that your love would continue to work in your word this morning. And you'd impact us. And you'd cause us to have an experience with you as well. In Jesus' name, the church said amen. I want to recap a little bit of the series. A smidgen, you know. I feel like he said so much in this series that I just cut it down to a few things. But I noticed as the theme is becoming better disciples. You don't just become a disciple. You have to become better. You know, some contractors, when you first started your contracting business, you're as good as you are now when you started then. Andy, be honest. He's like, I'm not, Pastor, don't throw me out. Jas, you're not looking at me. Right? You get better, right? Pastor Larry, you're a better drummer now than you used to be? Yeah, right? And Miley, don't throw your dad in the bus. Man, it's just... Oh, St. Patrick today, no less. You know, talking about becoming disciples. But becoming the church is a process, too. From the moment, like, I found Jesus and he started changing my life, and I was a radical mess. A radical mess. Radical mess. Addictions, problems, issues. I was just everywhere, right? And so the moment I found him, I didn't go, oh, super Christian. No way. It took me a minute, and I'm still in a process. He's not finished working on me. Why? Because I'm not perfect. I'm not Jesus. He's working on me. But it's becoming a disciple, right, Jake? It's a process. Becoming a father, it's a process. Becoming anything's a process, right? So I just put some five things that we may have learned so far, some keys to remember. And I think I got a slide, right? Kirsten said, you better explain these. I said, I will. The demonic and diseases and disciples all respond immediately to Jesus. We learned that those things respond immediately to Jesus. When Jesus asks them to come out, they come out. When he says be healed, they're healed. When he says there's one guy come, right? And that's awesome. Sometimes in our lives, he's expecting an immediate response. You know, sometimes parents, there might be a time to go, okay, I'm giving you two. One, two, you better do what I say. And there's other times like, don't count because I'm about to jump off the building. They need an immediate response from your parent, right? Sometimes God requires an immediate response. And he kept drilling in that first season, that word immediate. You notice that kept coming up over. I didn't put it in there. I'm just reading the red letters. It was immediate, right? So I thought the demonic and diseases and disciples, they all respond immediately to Jesus. How am I doing? How am I doing? Do I do an immediate response? Am I stubborn like Pico? Right? We all got a little Pico in us, you know? Don't you think the church should? Don't you think the church should be more immediate in its responses to the Lord? Anybody think the church should? Say, I am the church. Okay, good. Number two, the church people should not have an overly critical heart. Right? Because Jesus is all up on the Pharisees and Sadducees, and he is tearing them up. Right? Because they think they're all that in a bag of chips. But sometimes you don't know you're a Pharisee.
Well, you should. I can't believe Harold was doing that.
Why are you even looking at Harold unless you listen to his testimony? You got your own mirror. Check yourself out. Well, I think I'm fine. Then go to God. See what he says. He might call you stubborn. Those are some of the best conversations ever with God. And he did it lovingly. Pulled me aside. Said, you asked me. I want to talk to you. You know? I think sometimes we just need to talk to him. And church people can't be overly stubborn. No one's ever been perfect but who? Jesus. Only perfect one. Right? Number three, having a bad heart will affect and infect your vision of what God is doing. Man, the Pharisees watched his every move. They watched Jesus' every move and they never saw God once. And any miracle, and any wonder, and any sign. All they saw was what they thought he should be doing. It's not good. It could be a bad heart. A bad heart will see things wrong. That's what, examine my heart, O Lord. That's what the week that Dr. Heidi set up for heading up to Easter is in the heart examination week, you know. Number four, don't have messed up priorities. We must be careful to keep Jesus as a priority, right? Because they, the Pharisees and Judas, had very messed up priorities, right? Hey, don't heal. Don't heal on this religious day. Yeah, that guy's really sick and he's close to dying, but don't you break the rules and be nice to him. Choosing man's ways and money over God. Judas, right? Choosing anything above him and his ways, he says, is idolatry. Right? So watch your priorities, right? Say, I'm the church. And sometimes our priorities get messed up, don't they? I love college basketball sometimes too much. You know, I don't know. It's just them, though, right? They have messed up priorities. And just them and Pastor Sean. We'll go to number five. Follow him in his ways. That's baptism today. There's people getting baptized and saying, I'm forsaking my ways. I'm going to die to my ways, and I'm going to follow his ways. And that's not always easy, some of us way followers, right? To die to yourself, to do not do what you want to do, or take the job you want to take, or go after Mr. Fluffenstein, or Mrs. Ha-ha. I don't know, you know. I don't know. But it's a key element of baptism, exchanging your ways for his ways, right? Have a 6-1, good. Also, be careful not to become like them, his followers Judas, because misplaced jealousy can lead to killing the thing that you should love. Misplaced jealousy can kill the thing that you love. Let's go to an example. The Pharisees and Sadducees were part of a religious sect. Their whole thing was, come Messiah, come. Oh God, come into my life and change. Come back, Lord. We've been waiting for you, right? And then he came back and he was getting really popular. Shouldn't they be in love with what he's doing? But instead they plotted to kill him. Judas walking with him, a disciple, seeing miracle after miracle. He should love him. But his jealousy said, kill him. How many things in our lives that can pertain to, right? You got to be careful, right? You got to be careful. Number seven, I left off on purpose till next week, so good. Mark 5, 1 through 2. Those are just some key points to remember, you know, just some small things. Let's get into the word. They came to the other side of the sea. Well, you want to know what the seventh point is? It's not that great, but it's awesome. Jesus had a getaway boat. And I love that, so it's nothing great to remember, but if you know, you know. Getaway boat's awesome. Anyways, They came to the other side of the sea, to the region of the Gerasenes. And when Jesus got out of the boat, immediately, a man from the tombs with an unclean spirit met him. Jesus has attracted demons left and right. He can't go anywhere without immediately a demon showing up. And it doesn't make good for a good rest, you know. Jesus seems to be dealing with unclean spirits everywhere. Have you noticed that in the Book of Mark? Is there any unclean spirits in our lives that need evicting? Is there any unclean spirits in our lives that need evicting? It's just a question. We're only in the first verse. Go next. Mark 5:3-4. And the man, who were the unclean spirits, lived in the tombs. That sounds creepy, doesn't it? Sounds real creepy. Here's my question. What deadness do we still live in every day too? What kind of tombs are we living in? What kind of deadness do we choose death on a regular basis every day? Some part of death that we choose to live in. I know, it's only the third verse. It's crazy. Mark is crazy, right? Mark is going for it. And the man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with chains. Here's something to ponder. First, let me say I believe in talk therapy. I'm a co-owner of a Christian counseling practice. I believe it's effective. I also take thyroid medicine, so I'm not completely anti-big pharma, but I don't care for it much. But I believe there's help in the world for things you need. So take this with a grain of salt that it's supposed to be. Here's a hard truth. Man-made attempts at fixing bad spiritual conditions will often leave people with broken shackles on them. Man's attempt to take care of a spiritual condition, how they think it should be taken care of, will leave you shackled. It's true. It's true. Jesus is the truth. He's the only answer to a bad spiritual condition. He said, I'm the way and the truth of life. You're in a bad spiritual condition, run to Jesus as fast as you can. For he had often been bound with shackles for the feet. Society loves to influence how we walk. They love to just look better. Don't worry about this. Take care of the symptoms. Don't take care of the root. Jesus is the only spiritual truth, right? It says, and with chains, he tore apart the chains and broke the shackles into pieces, and no one was strong enough to subdue or tame him. No one, Miss Blanche, was strong enough. No one. Couldn't subdue, couldn't tame him. Mark 5:5. Night and day he was constantly screaming. Night and day he was constantly screaming. Night and day, constantly screaming. Constantly screaming and shrieking among the tombs and on the mountains and cutting himself with stones. Here's a question you don't have to put your hand up for, but have you ever been tormented? Thoughts screaming at you every day in your life. Your thoughts are screaming at you and it's cutting you to pieces inside. You don't got to raise your hand. Screaming out in your life. Have you ever been tormented by your regrets? Does it cut you still every day, things you regret? Or maybe you struggle with actually physically cutting yourself. Jesus can answer that too. This is the season to be free, honestly. This is the season. This is the season to be free. Time to choose differently. If you want prayer after service for any of these kind of things, I think Pastor Larry will be available. I'm not sure Pastor Justin's schedule. I know that Pastor Jody, Pastor Sharon, there's prayer. If you need something, we'll get it. You know, I got to pause here because I make a light moment because I feel the tensity that he wants to bring in. I just saw a cute baby. Just roll it towards me again, Iron. Yes. Yes. Well done. You guys crushed it. Way to do that baby thing. Fantastic. Fantastic, baby. Mark 5:6-7. Ooh. Seeing Jesus from a distance, he ran up and bowed down to him in homage. That's a great response. Anytime Jesus shows up, that's always a great response. We get familiar and comfortable with him. Just like the gospel story lead up to Easter, we get familiar and comfortable. We get familiar and comfortable in our relationships. We get familiar and comfortable everything. Before you know it, it's just, you know. We got to stop with that. There's things to appreciate sitting right next to you today. There's things to appreciate in your lives. It's the season to appreciate them, and it's the season to dig in deeper. Don't be callous to those things. When Jesus shows up in your life and somebody, respond, Miles, respond. And screaming with a loud voice. Demons are always screaming, right? That'd be tough. If I was one of the disciples, I don't like loud noises and screaming. Like, hey, disciple Sean, yeah, what? You got to take it out of your ears. Jesus is talking, oh, the demons are gone? I was listening to a cool playlist that Peter made, you know? Heck yeah, Peter. And screaming with a loud voice, he said, what business do we have in common with each other, Jesus, the Son of the Most High? Again, I hear that in Italian mafia voice. It's just how I hear. I implore you by God, do not torment me. Why does he say this? Why is he in negotiation with Jesus? Because he knew if you swear that you won't do something, you have to be, you're God, you keep your word. This is a test. If you're going to keep your word, I'm going to ask for something. You're going to keep your word. You're not here to torment me. It's not the time. It's not the end. This is not it, right? I know. We're not over. This isn't the end of time. Then don't torment me. You promise? Like, he's begging him. Why? Because he knows if I can get you to promise, you'll keep your word. Mark 5, 8 through 11. For Jesus had been saying to him, come out of the man, you unclean spirit. And he was asking him, what is your name? And he replied, my name is Legion, for we are many. And he began begging him repeatedly not to send them out of the region. But note this. Remember how we talked about no man could subdue him and no man could hold him down? He's sitting at the feet of Jesus begging. He's groveling right now, and Jesus didn't bring anything but himself. He's groveling. Groveling at his feet. Now there was a large herd of pigs. You know why there was a large herd of pigs? The Gerasenes, the Gentile lands. Jesus went over with his Jewish buddies to the Gentile lands for a minute. And in the Gentile lands, they raised pigs. Hebrews would never. Pigs were an unclean, defiling animal. Now there were a large herd of pigs grazing on the mountainside. Mark 5, 12 through 15. And the demons begged him, saying, send us to the pigs so that we might go into them. Jesus gave permission, and the unclean spirits came out of the man, and they entered the pigs. He's keeping his word, isn't he? I'm not going to send you out of the region. What do you want? You want to go into the pigs? Go ahead. That's just how I figured. I don't know. Jesus is like, dude, you had that all wrong, but that's how I get it. The herd, numbering about 2,000, rushed down the steep bank and into the sea, and they were drowned in the sea. Jesus kept his word. The demons got skunked. Now you can do that, but you're coming out, bro. You're coming out. You have no authority here. I don't got to ask. Just because you're groveling, I don't got to do a thing. Yeah, go into the pigs. You're done. I'm ruling and reigning. I'm setting people free. I'm the way that they get out of it, and I'm done with you. How many are you? One God, many demons. You're done. You're done. I'm not afraid of you. Right? The herdsmen ran away and reported in the city and in the country, and the people came to see what had happened. They came to Jesus and saw the man. Remember the guy who no one could subdue, right? The man who had been demon-possessed, sitting clothed and in his right mind. How crazy is that? Anybody seen any of the homeless population here? And there's some of them that are really troubled and difficult. And you know them. If you're an AJ, like they're popping in your head. You've got images. What if Sunday morning, during worship, they were clean, clothed, and in their right mind, sitting right here? When you go, whoa, that guy, right? That's what people say about Harold all the time, you know? And what it says they were frightened. I'm shaking my head. You weren't frightened by the screaming demon all the time, screaming all the time in the tubes, cutting himself. That didn't bother you nothing? No? Okay. You're frightened, are you? Well, change can be scary. Change can be radical. Change is necessary. It's the season. Mark 5, 16 through 17. Those who had seen it described it in detail to the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man and the pigs. So the people began to beg with Jesus to leave their region. Isn't that crazy? They can't beg Jesus to leave their region. Jesus made a radical change and the people reacted. And it made me think, I think I made a slide because it made me think and wonder if this was the issue. Do not become more comfortable in a God-absent culture. Do not be more comfortable in a God-absent culture or in your own dysfunctional living than you are with freedom. They saw someone in a culture that didn't serve God, ungodly culture. They saw someone's life radically changed and had been tormented and screaming. And they still could acknowledge God did what they couldn't do with shackles and chains. Sometimes we get so comfortable in a godless culture or our own dysfunction that when Jesus shows up, we're like, no, that's scary. Anybody? Yeah. Mark's crazy, isn't it? Mark's crazy. Mark 5, 18 through 20. And as he was stepping into the boat, the Gentile man who had been, say had been, the Gentile man who had been demon-possessed was begging with him. This time, what is he begging? Asking that he might go with him as a disciple. Isn't that sweet? Jesus did not let him come. I know, I'm in the boat like, oh, wow, that's hard. Who's going to tell him? I'm not going to say that. Not enough room in the boat? What's the problem, Jesus? We can fit him in. He's tiny, you know. I don't know. But he said to him, go home. You're healed up, delivered, in your right mind. Home would like to see that. Go home to your family and tell them. Go home to your family and tell them. Go home to your family and tell them, right? Tell them all the great things that the Lord has done for you and how he had mercy on you. That's your testimony. Some of us aren't sharing what God did because we're embarrassed or we're afraid or we're scared. And that's not the season to close your mouth about sharing what God has done in your life, because somebody needs to recognize that your mess that you got out of, they need that too. Their shackles, their freedom. They need to hear what God has done. And sometimes that makes you a little embarrassed. That's why up here, I even get filtered, but I throw myself under the bus of all the stupid things I've done. Why? Because I guarantee some of you have been that stupid as me. And God did it for me. You just got to go home and tell it. There's people that need to see your change because they saw the hell in your life. Wouldn't it be great to see the Jesus in your life too? Come on, right? So what did he do when he said that? No, you can't come, go home. He said, so he obeyed. Well, this guy's a great disciple. Man, that's a parent's dream. You said it once, he said, yep, yeah, sweet. So he obeyed and went away and began to publicly proclaim in Decapolis, the region of the Hellenistic cities. You know why I had to pause there? The gospel's going out to the Greeks, Amy. The gospel's going to the Greeks right here, the Decapolis. She's like, yes, Greeks, 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 Greeks. She loves the Greeks. Jeez. Right here, it wasn't Peter, James, John in a sailboat. The first place the Greeks ever hear the good news of Jesus, what had been a demon-possessed man with shackles, was set free. A Gentile went and preached the gospel of Jesus Christ to an ungodly civilization. And he proclaimed it everywhere he went. And because of that, there was Jesus' revival in the Greek islands. That's powerful. Proclaiming all the great things that Jesus has done for him. And all the people were astonished. You know, and people can't argue with those kind of things. I don't know if God exists. Dude, I was blind. Now I see. Well, I don't know if God exists. Well, I was demon-possessed. Remember, I was screaming in the tombs all the time? Did you see me screaming? Did you hear me? See my cuts? Yeah, Jesus. Like, when you bring out your Jesus story, people can't argue with, that's your Jesus story. No, don't. That's what happened. He did this for me. You can debate all you want, but this is what he did. Right? That story needs to get out again. The world's in a desperate place. And they need the red letters, but they need it read in you. He sent us out, right? So here's this guy sent out, not even one of the first 12, right? Time to tell your Christian redemption story. The people will be astonished. You want to hear an astonishing story? Man, grab. I pick on him all the time. Grab Harold. He'll tell you his story. He's not afraid. Radical. I know some stories around here. Like, man, you're pulling. Just because they're pretty and cute don't mean they have crazy stories, you know? I'm just saying. I'm not looking at any of you girls in the face, but I know your stories. Right? Just saying. Mark 5:21. When Jesus had again crossed over in the boat to the other side of the sea, a large crowd gathered around him. A large crowd gathered around him, and so he stayed by the seashore. And I wondered, if this is just me, you can throw this out. Don't judge me on it. But when he said he stayed by the seashore, what he's about to do, like, I pictured his back by the seashore. And that's exactly how I like to go out to dinner. I want to be coming up behind me. You know, and Jesus got a lot of people, and he's got his getaway boat. I'm just wondering, like, Jesus, I feel you. You know, I don't know. What's going on? He's got his back to the sea. They can't surround him that way. Mark 5:22 through 24. This hit me so hard, I was waiting for my blood work to be drawn, and I was going over some notes. And I started reading this again, and I started bawling. Right there in the lab, they're like, what's up with this dude? I'm like, Jesus, I had to shut my app off. Can't read the Bible right now. I can't do nothing. I'll just pray, you know. Because if you've ever had a child, this should wreck you. One of the synagogue officials, the place that just goes in and teaches and stirs up things all the time. People get mad and they want to kill him, the leaders. One of the officials named Jairus came up and seeing him, fell at his feet and begged him anxiously, saying, my little daughter is at the point of death. My daughter is at the point of death. He's desperate. I don't care that we kicked out of the synagogue. I might not be an official anymore. Like, don't, Jesus is a heretic. I'm killed. Look, he's the only one healing people, so I'm going to go see him. Deuces. And he sees him. He jumps down to his feet and he says, please, please, my daughter's going to die. See, I'm doing it again. Picture that. Let that hit you. Ever been desperate for God to do something? Desperate. My little daughter's at the point of death. Please come. Come and lay your hands on her so that she will be healed and live. If you come lay your hands on her, she'll be healed and live. If you will just come. I know you got your back to the sea and you just got off this crazy demon deliverance trip and everyone's here and I'm not your favorite person. I'm a synagogue official and there's going to be a big blowback for this, but I love my daughter more than anything in the world and I'm coming to ask the one person who could change that. I don't care what we have to do. Put yourself in that moment, right? They'll get you. And Jesus went with him, and the large crowd followed. Followed him and pressed in all around him, now from all sides. Why? Because his back's not to the sea anymore. They're around him. Mark 5:25. And a woman in the crowd who had suffered from a hemorrhage for 12 years. I don't like to suffer for a hangnail more than like 40 seconds. Ever suffered with anything? Suffered. 12 years. Suffered for 12 years from a hemorrhage and had endured much suffering at the hands of many physicians. So sometimes your condition can be made worse. Okay. She had spent all she had. She had spent all that she had and was not helped at all. But instead became worse. So she had heard reports. Why is it important for you to tell your story? Because someone needs to hear a report. Someone who's been suffering from 12 years needs to know what God can do. Right? She had heard reports about Jesus. Not, you know, you're not the star. And then I was like really cool because Jesus, no. What did Jesus do? When you share your report, make sure he's the star of your report. Not like, wow, I was such a bad guy. Here's my bad guy list. And then Jesus was awesome. No. Here's your bad guy list, and Jesus is awesome. Right? So they heard the reports about Jesus, and she came up behind him. Where's the sea? She came up behind him in the crowd and touched his outer robe, for she thought, if I just touch his clothing, I'll get well. Say immediately. Ooh, something about that word. Immediately her flow of blood was dried up, and she felt in her body and knew without any doubt that she was healed of her suffering. Say immediately. Immediately, Jesus, recognizing in himself the power had gone out from him, he turned around in the crowd and asked, who touched my clothes? Mark 5:38-34. Immediately, Jesus, recognizing in himself the power had gone out from him, turned around and asked, who touched my clothes? The disciples said to him, I just feel like they're sassy here. Do you ever read this sassily? I read a little sass in here. I just do. You see the crowd pressing around you from all sides, and you ask, who touched me? Doi. You know? Watch the sass, boys. Watch the sass. So, still, he kept looking around to see the woman who had done it. He knew the woman had done it. He knew, right? And the woman, though she was afraid, because no way a woman should be touching a rabbi for any reason at all, especially if you're unclean in that society. She's one step away from being stoned because she's unclean. The woman, though she was afraid and trembling, aware what had happened to her, came and fell down before him. Jairus, the demons, sick, all respond with humility. That's a great response. Fall down before him and told him the whole truth. And then he said to her, daughter, your faith, your personal trust, your confidence in me has restored you to health. Go in peace and be permanently healed from your suffering. Awesome pit stop, right? Amazing, right? Mark 5:35-36. While he was still speaking, some people came from the synagogue official's house saying to Jairus, your daughter is dead. Why bother the teacher any longer? They have terrible bedside manner. Like, that's the way you're going to go throw it down here? Okay. Your daughter has died. Don't bother the teacher anymore. Whew, I don't know about you, but he might have paid the consequences of me being human in that moment. Don't come up to me. Tell me like that for these people. No. You better back up, you know. Overhearing what was being said, Jesus was always listening. Overhearing what was being said, Jesus said to the synagogue official, don't be afraid. Only, say only. Only keep on believing in me and my power. That's a powerful statement to the rest of your life. Anything that pops up into your life, that's the biggest statement. John 3:16, for God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten son. Whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. Only believe in me and keep on believing only. Jairus is a great example here. Matthew 5:37. And he allowed no one to go with him. Say no one. Well, no one except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. I hope the rest of the guys, like, imagine, okay, I'm going to go. Jairus' daughter is dead. I'm going to go. And you three come with me. You nine. I hope those guys are praying for Jairus' daughter. I hope they're not jealous because they didn't get asked. And then I saw a snapshot of what their faces looked like when the three got asked. So I have a picture of the faces. Yeah, they weren't jealous. Nah, we're not jealous. Not us. We never get jealous. We're the children of God. We want everyone blessed. Everyone. We don't care if Jesus had a favorite in that moment. That won't bother our hearts at all. Say burr. Yeah. It's tough. Mark 5:38-40. They came to the house of the synagogue official. And he looked at the uproar and the commotion, and people loudly weeping and wailing. When he had gone in, he said to them, why make a commotion and weep? The child has not died, but is sleeping. Now here these people are intensely weeping. They're sad. It's a sad event, right? they began laughing at him scornfully. Wait, you went from intensely weeping and wailing to laughing at me scornfully? Bro, if you really were sad at that girl, wouldn't you be excited there's a miracle hope coming? Like, honestly, if you're a parent or a human and you see something like that happen and it's breaking your heart, if someone goes, hey, I heard this thing on TikTok, you sprinkle little Ajax on the dead people, and then boom, they come to life. I'm like, sprinkle Ajax, baby. May not work, but what do you got? Bring it to the table. My heart is broken. I don't want this to be the case. But that's not how they responded. Jesus said, I got this. Wait a minute. If I was Peter, I'd be like, I'll shut him up, Lord. You want me to? I'm ticked for Jairus right here. I'm mad at these folks when I read it the first time. What? You were all big show of her dying, and Jesus shows up, and you decide to mock him? And you ever heard the stories of what he's done? Well, Noah's been raised from the dead. Okay. You're going to find out. They began laughing scornfully at him because they knew the child was dead. They're super smart. They know everything. But he made them all go outside. Jesus kicked them out of the house. And he took along with him the child's father and mother and his three companions, and they entered the room where the child was. Let yourself be in that moment too. What's Jesus going to do? No one's been raised from the dead. What's he going to do? Who knows what God's going to do all the time, to be honest with you. Someone said they always know what God's going to do. I don't trust them. Because if you always know what God's going to do, because God reserves what he wants to do for what he wants to do. Never be so arrogant that you always think you know what God will do. But here's the flip side. Never be so arrogant you always think, I know what God's going to do all the time. I'm a man of God. I've seen miracles. Awesome. Great. But never doubt what God can do. Never doubt what God can do. Never. He said, throw that mountain to the sea. He said, so if you got an impossible situation, why not sprinkle Jesus on it? You don't know what he's going to do, but you don't know what he's going to do. So give him a chance. Like, give him a real chance. Give him a real chance. All right. Mark 5:41. Taking the child's hand, he said to her tenderly. I know. He said to her tenderly, Talitha cum. Talitha cum, which is translated, little girl, I say to you, get up. Then the little girl, what'd she do? Immediately. Little girl immediately got up and began to walk, for she was like 12 years old. And immediately, they who witnessed the child's resurrection were overcome with great wonder and amazement. Can you imagine? Like, be in that moment. Have you ever seen a miraculous moment in someone's life? Like, I was excited that the bathroom was fixed. I was whooping it up before, woo, yeah! I was stoked about it, you know? Imagine if some precious kid who was broken and left for dead is no longer that way. And what if they belong to you? I'd be whooping it up. There'd be a party. I'd be like, break out everything. We're doing everything. Woo! Block party. What are we doing? Putting Jesus banners up. We're shouting, woo! Jesus, you come. Like, sit at this big table. I'm burn the house down. Fatted calf. Whatever you need. Right? And then after their amazement, be like, yeah, settle down. Settle down. Settle down. He gave them strict orders. He gave them strict orders. Say, sometimes God does that. We don't like that part of God sometimes. We don't want no strict orders. Proud to be an American. At least I do what I want. Right? But sometimes God gives strict orders. He gave them strict orders that no one should know about this. And then here he is giving his Italian side. He told them, go ahead, give her something to eat. Yeah. In my household as a kid, that's how you fix any boo-boo. A cannoli does wonders, you know. Just saying. But I thought about this. Just a ponderance here. When God brings people back to life again, the church should be ready to feed them. Say, I am. I am the church. So when people come back to life who were far from him and had fallen down, that maybe had deliverances in their life, guess what? He's going to send them to you. What do you got to feed them? It's time to stock up your refrigerator of your soul. Because if we're believing for the dead to come back to Jesus, then we got to feed them. So I am the church. We'll be transitioning to prayer here in a little bit. The baptism candidates. Yeah, candidates. Because sometimes I talk people out of it. Because I let them know what it really is. It's an exchange of your life. It's not just, well, I did this religious symbol. No, no, what you're saying is I'm going to die to myself. And I'm all in for whatever God has been. I've been recruited by the army of God. And if you're ever in a military institution, they will tell you what to do. They don't suggest it. You will move to Germany. But I didn't sign up for that. I thought I'd like do a California tour. Oh, did you? Yeah, I'd rather not do a California tour either. But I call them candidates because I lay it out. Say, this is what you're saying, that this is who you are. And this is what you want. So I'll meet with them in a little bit in my office. We'll cram in there. We'll talk. But if this is your season of change, I want to encourage you to respond immediately. Like there's not a guaranteed another season. Like if God's been poking at something in you, at you, or wants to bring you along and say, hey, this is where you're being stubborn. I've been trying to help you. Or if he's trying to say, I want this for your life, and I'm just asking you to follow me. Trust me. Give me everything, and I'll take you where you need to be. I don't know what he's saying to you, but if he is saying something to you, it's time to respond. This season is this response season, right? Maybe you don't understand that Jesus paid for everything. Maybe like you don't know the sins I committed. You know the mess I made. No, I probably don't, but I know one who does. I know one who says he'll forgive it if you'll come to him. He will cleanse you. He doesn't love me more than he loves you. I gave him no cause to love me at all. But yet, Miss Blanche, sinners like us, right? He died for us. Isn't that crazy? Man. So maybe you just need your payment done in full. Jesus is ready to take the debt off your hands. Are there anybody here that's never even chosen repentance and new life? One of our pastoral staff, you know, Pastor Larry in the back, myself, Dr. Heidi, Pastor Jody teaching somewhere. She's out there. Pastor Sharon's in the front row. Pastor Justin's over here. Miley's right there. Miley's our missionary. Have you declared Jesus as Lord? Have you made the exchange? Or maybe sometimes we made the exchange, but we like picked up our own. I got it from here, Lord. I'm not the mess I was. I'm like, oh, now I got it. Ever do that? You're saved. Jesus comes to your life and you start, roll, 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 I'm doing. And they go, I got it from here. No, I can do this. I got it. I'm going to do good. And you just kind of forgot to let him lead and you just started leading him around. He's a God, not a dog. We're in the God track. It's just dyslexia up there. Right. We're in the God track. So maybe that was you. Maybe like, man, I was rolling after Jesus and we were together and I saw signs and wonders and I dipped on him for, but I'm not the person I was. He says, yeah, but you're not yet who you're supposed to be either. And that's what we're called to be, right? So if you want to get baptized this morning and you weren't on the list, you're like, I'm in. I want forgiveness. I want to be set free. I want to be a disciple. I'm ready to go with all my heart after him. I didn't bring clothes or a top. Man, come to the office. I'll meet with you. Baptism is a public sign of a few things, of repentance. It's a sign of renouncing other things. Remember, the things getting into our lives. Right? And it's learning to live for him. And it's becoming. So this morning, if that's anybody, I'll have us all stand. I will take my baptism candidates in just a second to my office and speak with them. I would encourage you to stay around if you can for baptism because it's wonderful. It is wonderful to see someone commit their life to Jesus and they come up out of the water and to have people going, we are in your family now. We're here. We're here. We're here. We are with you. We're so excited for you. We're going to be with you along the way. We're going to be, if you need to lean on me, lean on me. Because I've been not strong. I had a need for someone to lean on. Lean on me. Right? Lean on Harold. Well, he's a little wobbly, but spiritually and emotionally, you can lean on him. Right? Harold's like, Pastor, why you keep... I got to sit further in the back. That's because Jeff's not here. I couldn't pick on him, you know? But I'm going to pray us out. But if anybody wants to respond personally to some of the things I talked about today, please grab Pastor Larry, Pastor Heidi, Pastor Joey, Pastor Justin. I'm not sure, Larry, is it your turn to help me with baptisms today? Pastor? Molly's going to help too, yeah, because there's girls and I want her to. But whose turn are you guys? You just flip-flop. One of those guys will be out there to help me. And Miley. And Miley. And Miley. Well, Father, this morning, I pray you do in us what no one thought you could do. Lord, you do in your church again what no one thought was possible. And Lord, I get in the way a lot. So I'm asking you to move me out of the way, move us out of the way, and you move back into the way. You be the way, the truth, and the life in your church again, and let it start with me. In Jesus' name, amen.